Sexy.
Coming up next time, Rider Spotlight.
Hi, I'm Kristen Broderick. I'm a ladies expert racer here in Canada, and I am doing a fundraiser for myself to get to ISCE in 2022. I'll be selling some t-shirts. If you look at my ladies off-road dirt biking page on Facebook, or if you check me out on Instagram, you can find those shirts there. If you'd like to support me on my road to ISCE, I would love that. So thank you.
Check the mic and make sure it sounds right. Boy.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Barry Moore. My next guest is an Alberta racing legend, an ISDE gold medalist, organizer of some of the province's most iconic Red Bull events, such as Extinction, Rocks and Logs, and Outliers. His new project, Rad 2.0, is inspiring more young people to get into the sport. Coming up next, this is Shane Cuthbertson.
Me sit down and talk to you. It's hilarious. Like
really? That's cool.
Yeah, man. Like once I started talking to local riders, people keep slipping suggestions into the drop, like into the DM on Instagram. And yeah, they're just asking me to talk to this person, that person, but your name keeps coming up. So
oh, right on.
Yeah, man. Like you have a lot of support. you're running the 2.0 class.
Yeah,
my neighbor down the road, he's in there with you, Steve Millthorpe.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, so he thinks it'd be great.
All right.
Digging into your past, you've got a pretty significant relationship with Red Bull, hey?
Yeah, I was super lucky. I actually had built the track down at Wild Rose Motorcycle Park there. And it was just basically a big garbage kind of trashy area where they put all their stuff, and some of the trials riders would ride around there and just kind of play off of, you know, whatever was in there, but it's really overgrown. So I started wanting to do enduro cross, and I quickly found, I'm like, oh man, I need a real enduro cross track to practice on. It wasn't just good enough to go to the woods and play around on some logs and some rocks anymore. So you kind of needed that closed course sort of thing where you can get your heart rate spiked at, you know, whatever we ride at 180, 200 and kind of get that feeling and that training. So I just made a pitch to him, like, hey, do you mind if I just clean up that area and put a little bit of a track there? And they said, yeah, no problem. Of course I was going to clean up kind of the mess that was there. And I'm like, all right, cool. So I did. And I organized a whole bunch of volunteers to come out, and it was super easy to find obstacles and stuff like that. As soon as we kind of put the word out, there was just a flood of people wanting to help and build stuff. So yeah, we built this, the initial track was there. And so I started training on it and doing my thing. And then other people started kind of seeing it there. But really what hooked Red Bull was they were there for a KTM demo day at the track one day. And the manager for the area came down and she seen the track, and then you could see the Calgary downtown skyline in the back. So she's like, oh, this looks awesome. And she called me. She's like, hey, are you interested in putting events on with us? And I said, heck yeah.
Yeah.
I was kind of, just by pure luck, I was like, this is awesome. So that's kind of where the relationship started. Probably 8-9 years ago, and it was awesome. Like the lady that I was dealing with at the time, she was just super pumped on it, and everything flowed super easy. And for me, I was pumped because I'm like, whatever, you know, Red Bull's such a big name, and then being able to associate it with our tiny little off road sport in Calgary was just, I was like, I was pumped on that. So
that's crazy. Yeah, going from a local stage to a worldwide stage like overnight.
Yeah.
And so Rocks and Logs was for 4 years or something like that before it switched over to Outliers.
Yeah, we did. It was only supposed to be 3 years, and then we did another 3 years. So in total, we had 6 years.
Oh, wow.
And then that's kind of Red Bull's business planning. They like to do things in sort of 3-year increments and see how things go and kind of reevaluate. So, After the second set of 3 years, they're kind of like, we want something bigger and better. We want to kind of be more on the world stage. And so again, they asked, hey, you want to help? I'm like, yeah, like I'm all in, man. So yeah. This is like a dream come true. Like you don't even have to ask me really. So
yeah, they're going to be polite though.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, that's, we started working on the Red Bull Outliers concept, and I could tell right away they were really serious about the Outliers concept. I was talking to a lot of different people in higher capacities at Red Bull. And then, yeah, we kind of built that, and it was kind of a unique, project that we embarked on, and we're still kind of in it. Like we didn't really get to completely fulfill our event in 2019, yeah. And then just with the snow and stuff like that. And then 2020, it was canceled obviously. But I think we're coming back for 2021. So
nice.
And planning stages and stuff like that, trying to make sure that we can comply with, local regulations as far as, COVID and put on a race still and test the waters a little bit for a really big event. I think that's will be coming in 2022. So,
oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. Wait,
you have a history of, the debut of your events having like horrible ass weather, don't you?
Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah. It's like, and it's actually helped me develop like kind of thinking on your feet and reacting real quick and making like these spur of the moment decisions and using the people around you that, you know, you kind of bounce a bunch of crazy ideas off, like how are we going to pull this thing off? And it seems like for the most part, we've been able to find our way around it, except for 2019, we just couldn't figure out how to pull that last day off in the Badlands, yeah. All the snow. It was just too dangerous. So, the first Red Bull Rocks and Logs we did, we had a brand new track. Everything was fresh. And like the soil was all, because we had built it from scratch, we basically leveled the entire place. And so it was, the soil was soft. And then we got like 100 millimeters of rain the day before, man. The event, or two days before the event. And it just wouldn't stop raining. And so we ended up having to delay it by one day. And there was just a whole bunch of wood chips at the track because a lot of arborists and stuff like that, they call up the track and they like, hey, we got a bunch of mulch, you know, can we just dump it there? And the track just kind of spreads in the parking areas and stuff like that to help keep dust down and it retains the water really well. So we just said, hey, do you mind if we like just take all those piles of mulch you got and we're just gonna like just layer the track with it, and that's what we did. And and then the Sunday comes around and the track, it just like the mulch, it just absorbed all the water. Once we got a few riders on it, it's kind of all mixed in and it was like mint perfect traction, and the sun came out and it was just like, you know, it was kind of a godsend that happened. And so ever since, if you ever come to any Red Bull Rocks and Logs event, the place is just covered in mulch everywhere.
That's
it
awesome.
It seems to be the magic pill for us there.
That's amazing. And yeah. I also was looking through your past there, and you have the extinction events. And I guess it was sort of the same thing on the opening day, horrible wind or whatever.
Yeah. We had a... Yeah, pretty big windstorm that came through, and the main thing in that area, it's in Dinosaur Provincial Park, or just north of Dinosaur Provincial Park on some private land, and just with the erosion and stuff like that, there you got like 3, 4, 5, 6 different layers of soil composition, and the one area that's the worst for us is called bentonite. And as soon as that's wet, it's like you can't go anywhere. Like you could be on flat ground and you'll just be spinning your wheel. You know, you can't even stand up on it.
Oh wow!
I know we've experienced that several times out there, setting up the course, and you're kind of just walking along, and then all of a sudden, whoop, you know, your feet come out from underneath you, and away you go.
Oh, like glass or ice,
yeah,
I guess.
It's super, and I guess they use it for for like lubricating, like drilling, like for drilling and stuff like that. They, that's how slippery. It's kind of a, like a lubricant kind of thing.
Oh, wow.
There. So that's why we usually have it in, we always aim to have it in August so that, we could almost guarantee the best, conditions. Cause we knew if it was wet, it'd be pretty much an out. So yeah, the first year we did it, we got a little bit of a storm that came through. It rained and it was like major wind storm. So that wrecked a whole bunch of tents and stuff like that. But other than that, really, it was just the rain. And then we had to do a few modifications to the course and the qualifying to get around that, which we did. And then we got everybody qualified and through. And then the sun came out again and dried everything out. And then it was like a perfect, perfect race conditions for the final.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was, yeah, that just seems to be Mother Nature. She just
likes
to throw a few little wrenches in there and
we kind of the thing, like that saying, darkest before the dawn, seems to be very true for all the debuts. Like if this isn't going to work out, then yes, it works out. Like,
yeah,
that's awesome. So I guess you have a history that goes way back, beyond organizing. You've raced ISDE, Erzberg, Romaniacs, all that kind of stuff. Is that like being a part of those events sort of what gave you the drive or the ambition, I guess, to bring that here to North America? Like,
And those events were key because they kind of gave me that experience, what it looks like on an international stage. And so I was able to bring like a lot of the experiences I had doing all those events to the events that we were creating. And that's how Extinction came along. Like it was myself and three of my buddies that we created this Cornergrass racing team way back in the day. And that was kind of came out of like they wanted to help me kind of progress and achieve some of the goals that I had in mind for kind of bucket list things, right?
And
at that time it was hard to get like there was not much for social media. It was hard to get publicity. It was just kind of like you were in if you were in the magazines and that was the best way you could do it. So we're like, well, if we're just racing locally, like we were getting okay publicity, but it was hard for us to really give the value back to our sponsors and kind of build upon, you know, our name and our sponsors branding and stuff like that. So we're like, why don't we just go like do some like bucket list or events, like let's go to Erzberg and let's go to Romaniacs and go to the 6 days and stuff like that. So that's what we started doing. And then, you know, our sponsors were like, they just loved it because we were able to get in the magazines and I started writing articles of all of our adventures and stuff like that. So that's how we kind of got to that point. And then we got back and we're like, yeah, we need something like this in Canada. Like Canadians are gnarly riders. Like they need to have these experiences that we've gone internationally and found. Like we need to bring that to the local population and allow them the opportunity to like see how rad this really is. So that's how we came up with Extinction. And we ran that for 2 years. And it was awesome. Like we had Throttle Entertainment used to be a company that used to put out all the DVDs on all these gnarly hard enduro events, and you know people would just plug the DVDs in and they loved it, right? So they actually came out and filmed the second Extinction that we had, and they put it in one of their videos, which was pretty cool. So there's like a 30-minute edit out there in Cyberland showing all
that. I was watching it the other day.
So that was pretty neat. And then when Red Bull came along, I'm just like, oh, I know exactly, you know, I mean I have a rough idea what to do and how it should look, and so that's what they really leaned on me for, was just the sporting aspect of it.
Okay.
And they're kind of like, yeah, we know how to put events on, we can kind of do all that administrative stuff and everything, but we need you to tell us, like, okay, so I want to have a log in the event, how big should it be, kind of thing, you know? So that's what it all kind of boiled down to.
Okay. Yeah. They need you for the track experience.
Yeah, the track experience and the formatting, like how it should run and that type of stuff. So that's really, they kind of call me like the race director is sort of my title within that group. So anytime there's anything sporting, they're like, hey, what do you think? And I'm like, I think we should do this. And they're like, cool, let's do it. I'm like,
that's awesome. They seem to have a pretty good attitude about things. Like they're just like, yeah, let's do it. Like if it's going to be big, then it has to be really big. And yeah, like I like their attitude.
Yeah. It's awesome. It's like the name of the company just symbolizes everything, and everybody knows and relates to it. So as soon as somebody sees Red Bull, they're like, well, this is going to be big. And that's how they developed, you know, their reputation over the years. It's not like they do it, you know, small or kind of half-assed. They go all in. And the cool thing about it is they'll generally be able to provide the resources. If you come up with some off the wall idea, they're like, oh, okay, well, you know, well, how does that look? And, what's it going to take? And they'll find ways to make it happen. Right. So that's the really cool part about it. You come with that extra backing behind you, and you can come up with all these off the wall ideas, and they can make it a reality. And you're just like, yeah, like I'd never be able to do that kind of stuff on my own. Right. So,
oh my God. Yeah. Their partner network must be intense.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. So then you also like, have Rad 2.0. Where did that come from?
So as I got bigger into the events, and actually as Outliers came along, I needed to have like a proper company set up to do all that work with them as far as insurance and liabilities and stuff like that. So I developed Rad 2.0, and then I had an interest because both my boys, they compete and stuff like that. And I had been to ISDEs before, and I'm like, I kind of seen like this need to have sort of a program kind of like stick and ball sports where you could kind of bring, you know, the youth up and they go through like this systematic approach to learning how to ride better, coaching. You know, there's various different levels. You know, you'd have like, you know, your house leagues, and then if they wanted to get more serious about it, they kind of go through those ranks and progress as a professional. And that's what all these big European teams in like International 6-Day Enduro and stuff like that, like France and Italy, and even the US now, they had like this, it seemed like this way where they could progress the racers or the riders that were interested and continue to build upon that. They had proper people. So that was my initial idea as far as athletic development, was to kind of sort of have like, you know, help have a, like a youth development program that I could kind of, you know, get a small group where I'd actually do it like hockey or whatever. I'd like have, yeah, you know, I'd invite whatever 5 to 10 kids and have them come out and try, have it like a little tryout, you know, and see how, you know, not only how good of a rider they are, but their personality and how they would fit in sort of a team environment. And then, I wanted to kind of have them all train together and provide them the tools and the resources and stuff like that, and they could build it upon a team. And then I wanted to kind of have them do that throughout the summer, and then have like a big event that they were working towards, right? So like ISDE, or maybe they wanted to go to Romaniacs, or maybe just even Outliers or something like that.
Yeah.
And then they could all kind of develop that camaraderie within each other and stuff like that. So then the athletic part of the company kind of came from that. And just with COVID, it kind of messed everything up. And even with the racing, so RAD stands for race and athlete development.
Okay.
So that's where the synonym comes from. So with the athlete development part, then I kind of just shifted gears. And I have a friend, which is Chris Birch. Everybody knows Chris. And he was coming over from New Zealand with his family to do a lot of coaching in Canada. And he had been coming over for 3 or 4 years. And when COVID came along, obviously he couldn't travel. So him and I kind of were talking, and I'm like, hey man, like, you know, if you got people that want to have some coaching, like maybe I can just step in and help you out until you can kind of come back. And he thought that was a great idea. So that's kind of what we did last year. And it was really cool because I was able to, he's so good at it and he's been doing it for so long. He has this like really cool system, like how he goes about his coaching, and he's really good at explaining things and sort of identifying weaknesses and stuff like that. So it was cool for me because I was able to use him as a mentor for some of the training. And then when I got into it, I'm like, oh, this is really neat and rewarding. Like I really like this. And so now COVID's still here. He's still not even over. So I'm like, well, I'm just going to kind of roll with it. And so I've been getting more active in the coaching things. And so this year, 2021, we're putting a little bit more of a push on that.
Nice.
As far as the athlete development part, or I call it coaching, and then the racing part of it's coming back. So yeah, Rad 2.0 is kind of starting to pick up a little bit more steam. And so, yeah, we're pretty excited about the development and growth of the company that way.
I've seen you in the wild last year out at Fallen Timber. A friend of mine and I encountered you and your students, cool. I guess, whatever, like on the Dirty Moose side.
Yeah.
And I stopped you guys from going through a sea of muskeg because we had just suffered through it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You're coming down this line and you're just don't. This is like, these are your new kids, right? And you're I was like, fuck that. You're going to lose so much time just in this space, like go around. So awesome. They already looked like a team by then. You know what I mean? Like,
It's sweet. I remember that. And, and that's so much fun. Even stuff like that, like you're just out there and these people are experiencing totally different new things, and it's just such a rewarding thing. I really the more I do it, the more I'm like, man, I love this. Like this is what, you know, I can give back to the sport after what I've been into it for so long, you know. And it's super rewarding to have people just all of a sudden you see those light bulbs go on. Yeah. And it's just like, yes, like they're like, I got it. I'm like, yeah, you got it. Like, that's awesome.
Oh man. Like, I was talking with Steve yesterday about the coaching. He feels that I would be ideally suited for the class that he's in with you.
Oh, yeah.
Because you guys go through the fundamentals, and kind of hold a mirror up to each of the riders to sort of like humble check them, let them see where their skill set really is. And then, give them just a few tools that they can build on after. So it seemed like if it wasn't for the fact of the timing, I'd totally be in on it, but I can't get from my job to your course on time for Thursdays. But
yeah, no, that's cool. Yeah, that's where we're kind of trying to play with a bunch of different things to see, you know, how we can kind of spread that out and give people the opportunity to be involved in one of the coaching sessions, whether it be during the weekdays or whether it's a weekend or what have you. And yet still trying to fit that in with all my other responsibilities, like my family and stuff.
Yeah.
Like other businesses that I'm doing. So yeah, we're kind of playing with a bunch of things and trying to find what the right fit is and, you know, what works for the public. And now too, it's like so crazy because the motorcycle community is like growing so fast, and it's just like, yeah, and there's so many new people in the sport, and so you want to take advantage of that and provide them the opportunities, also those same opportunities as like our core group of people that have been in off-road for so long. So
yeah,
so that's kind of it's a good thing, and also it's like you now we got to figure out how to adjust and provide those opportunities to those new people coming in as well.
Well, yeah, it's like, I mean, the learning curve being what it is, riding with like experienced friends, like, you know, the rule, always ride with somebody better than you, like, cause they sort of pull you along.
For sure.
And then if how I read the waters today, there's people joining the off-road community with absolutely no friends in it at all. They're just like, go to Blackfoot or JC Power, and they buy their bike. They show up to the woods, ride around in circles for a little while, not knowing where to go, pack their stuff up and go home. And I think that's sort of like a bit of a letdown for them, you know, like,
yeah. I've had people come into some of our sessions and they're like, I just don't know, you know, I'm new, I'm here. I just don't know where to go or who to talk to. And so they're like, I came to this coaching session so that maybe I could kind of figure it out. Right. Like,
yeah.
Okay, you guys ride here. Okay, this is a new area. And then, you know, they might develop a few contacts even just from that. And they're like, oh, yeah, okay. And they're like, well, where should I go ride? And I'm like, yeah, you should check out one of the local clubs, you know, like Rocky Mountain Dirt Riders. And they hold, you know, Wednesday night rides. And so then they're like, oh, I didn't know that. Awesome. You know, so it's that kind of a community thing where you're right. Like there's a lot of people that it's tough to break in.
Yeah,
figure it out. But once you do, it's like, you know, there's just so many more levels to that once you kind of get in, right? So
yeah, I mean, like for us, for my family, it was hitting up our first second gear club race, right? Like it was actually an AMSA one, but after we were there, we made friends, campfire friends that we, you know, never saw again. And then the next year we came back to an event and there's all these people we remember from last year, and then now we're all making contacts and making plans, and you see each other a few times, and now if you want to go riding, there's someone to ride with. And it's not at all like what we imagined beforehand, being sort of like, I don't know, like a stuck up community. Like if you're not vouched for, no one gives a shit. Instead, it's just like, all you got to do is say hi. And everyone's like, yeah, hey, like,
let's go for a ride.
Yeah, yeah. It's very welcoming. Like,
yeah, no, that's awesome.
I don't know. Yeah.
I get that a lot too. Like people are like, oh man, I just like, you know, I'm like, hey, do you mind if we join you for the ride? And then people get all nervous and weird. And I'm like, what's the matter? And they're like, well, I'm not your level. And I'm like, honestly, I don't care. Like, I like to ride dirt bikes. So let's go ride, you know? And I don't have any expectations or put any pressure on people to like have to go like super fast or whatever. But I think that's just people's nature, right?
Yeah, I get that.
But yeah, you're right. The overall community is very welcoming. And like, you know, if you're a brand new rider and you're going out with an experienced group of riders, generally, I would say, you know, they're more than welcoming, like, come on out, you know, and see what it's like. And
I think what new riders don't understand, myself included in the beginning, is like when you're going to ride with more advanced riders, you always feel like you're holding them up, right? Like, And there's like that phase where you get just sort of good enough that you can catch up to them when they're waiting for you, but you never get a break. You know, they're always rested because you're struggling, and you catch up to them, and then they take off because they've been waiting for you, and then whatever. Yeah. And that feels kind of like you're holding them back. But then you sort of take somebody along with you because you're like an inexperienced rider and they're happy to go with you. And then you're in the same spot your mentors were. Like you're waiting for this person. You always get to rest. They never get to rest. And like, you know, they're struggling, and then it all balances out. And it's kind of like you realize that's part of paying your dues. Like someone waited for you. Now you have to wait for somebody. And and nobody cares. Like nobody cares. Yeah. Everyone gets excited to see someone just cracking the throttle. Like no matter how bad, like,
yeah.
I don't know.
That's the really cool part about it for sure.
Yeah. That's my take. I don't know.
Yeah.
So you've got two fast as heck kids, eh? Like,
yeah.
I was at Wild Rose last weekend. They were there. I thought about trying to catch up to them because they'd reached out to me and we've chatted a few times.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't, so I was like, fuck it. I'll see them if they stop. Like, that's about it. Like,
yeah.
And so that's got to feel pretty nice. Like, how old are they now? They're mid-teens, like 17. Yeah.
Chase is 18, and Kale is my youngest. He's just turning 15 here next week. So
Man, they just have so much talent, and it's nice to watch. I don't know what the, like, pretty much seeing any kid send it is awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, your oldest.
I love the kids. Like even when I get into coaching, and we really didn't really do a whole lot of coaching for kids, and I just started doing a couple sessions with them, and man, it's so rewarding. Like I'm like, because kids, like, they don't have any preconceived notions. They don't really expect anything of, you know, like, it's like I can't go to say to adults, hey, like, let's go play follow the leader. I'm going to find some really cool stuff. And you guys got to kind of do that kind of thing, right? With kids, you can kind of play around with them, and they're like, oh yeah, this is awesome. Like, it's a little different than with adults. So I have a lot of fun doing that. And that's kind of what I do with my kids too. Like we would, you know, obviously you want them to have fun. And every time you go out, you know, it's like a game and stuff like that. And that's how we kind of just, how they've kind of grown up racing or riding and racing, I guess. Sort of following in my footsteps a little bit. And now it's just like, yeah, I go out and we ride together. I'm like, oh my God. Like the funny thing is right now, all three of us are like pretty much identical in our abilities. And it's just like, we can go anywhere and we're just hooting and hollering at each other the whole entire time. And they're like my best buddies ever. Right. And yep. And the cooler part is, you know, they're my kids too. So like, we have a great time when we go riding. It's just so awesome. And
oh yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, now I guess, you know, I'm at that point where now I'm just like, I'm kind of trying to hold on to their coattails a little bit. And I'm just like, you know, I'm blown away because I wasn't even close to that, their abilities when I was their age, you know? So it's pretty neat to see how they've progressed. And,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
Like, on the Instagram, I think Cal posted, like a few weeks ago, it was the first time they went riding without dad, and like,
yeah.
They're super stoked that they're just like, you know, we're grown up now. We can just do it. Like,
yeah,
I thought that was pretty. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, Cal was one of the ones that was pushing me to interview you as well. Like, and he's so stoked. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
When he reached out, I didn't connect last name, 'cause I just look at handles, like all one word kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he's just like, yeah, my dad, Shane, he's got a lot of stories. You should talk to him. And it's just like, okay. Oh shit, that's Shane.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, so they're, I don't know, man, they're just good kids. And, I'm happy for you, I guess. I don't know.
Like, yeah.
As a dad, you know?
No, I mean, and we're super happy too. And I think a lot of it, you know, why I think, I mean, everybody thinks their kids are great and awesome and stuff like that, obviously. But you know, I feel like we're super lucky because they grew up in the community, and we were always out, and we still are super active in the community. And you get to meet so many different people. You're out kind of, you know, competing, whether you're competing or just riding. And it's like they just kind of stayed. That's what they loved, and you know, they didn't kind of get into like messing around, like big parties and stuff like that. Like they just didn't, they were just like, I'd rather go out with mom and dad and let's go camp and meet all of our friends that we see every weekend and stuff like that. And for me, I think, you know, having had them grow up in our local community and in the sport really helped kind of develop who they are, you know, as a person. So, and you know, obviously I'm super passionate about the community and stuff like that. Yeah. And I think that's really helped kind of develop who they are and hopefully going forward as well. Right. So,
well, it's
pretty cool to be able to lean on a community, and it's like, you know, you're doing what you enjoy the best. And then you get all these extra benefits on the side as well, as far, you know, as just developing people and relationships and stuff like that is like the added bonus to it. So.
I agree, man. And like, as young men, it's great that they have something to do, because I think it's having nothing to do is where all the trouble comes from.
Yeah. Yeah, you totally. Know? Yeah. Like,
I know, I was a young kid.
Yeah.
You know, so, back to racing, I guess you obviously you did a bunch of local events, and like even our bigger local events aren't that big. When you went, like to Erzberg or anything like that, what was your first sort of large event, and did you get like a bit of a culture shock when you seen like 1800 competitors versus like 100 for us?
Yeah for sure. But the first time I got involved was I went to my first 6 days in 2005, and how that kind of came about was I had taken a break from competing and riding really for, I don't know, once life came to be a reality, and you know, I had to work and make money and stuff like that. And so when I was about, when from 20 to say 28, I got married and then we had the first kid. And so I didn't really raise much during that 20 to 28 age range. And then when we had Chase, our oldest boy, I was like, it kind of spurred me on to go, man, I really need to, like, you know, I had put on quite a bit of weight. I was like smoking and stuff like that. And I'm like, I got to get my health back in order. Right. I want to be able to spend, you know, I want to be there for him. So that spurred me on. I lost all this weight and then I just went to a race on a whim one time and I just was like, eh, I'll go see how things are. Like, I kind of missed that competing part of it. And then I won this race and I hadn't been around for like 10 years. And I'm just like, well, that was weird and surprisingly easy for me. Right. Because I had found like I was in really good shape. I had quit smoking and I'm like, oh, all of a sudden I'm like, oh, this is actually okay. I had all these skills from before and now I actually have the fitness to go along with it. So I started competing obviously from that point. And then I got, you know, I was doing really well. And then a buddy, I met this Lee Freiberger. He's the team manager for the Canadian ISDE effort. And he's like, man, you should come do one of these things. They're awesome. And he's like, you know, you kind of got the local thing figured out, like kind of branch out. And I'm like, oh, okay, that seems interesting. So away I went to Slovakia with Team Canada. And yeah, that event was just like, it was just eye opening. Like, it changed my whole entire perspective on competing. And I went to that event you know, like, oh, there's what, 30, 40 different nations there, yeah. Just different cultures. And just that was just like awesome. And then I came home from that event. I'm like, oh man, my wife's not going to be happy. I got to do more, you know? Then we had Kale and then I ended up going to New Zealand the next year and I left her at home with 6 month old Kale. And, she's like, really? I'm like, yeah, I gotta go. Like, it's just, I gotta go. And, we had a really big effort that year in New Zealand. Like, we had a huge team. It was super popular. We had like really good backing through KTM and Aldo, a shoe company.
Yeah.
So we sent like a really good team and did that. And that experience was awesome as well. And, so that's kind of where all those, like all the international stuff started to brew, doing all that kind of stuff. And so then I was like, this is where this Cornergrass Racing team came about. And we were like, well, let's do some other stuff. Like all of a sudden we started seeing all the stuff about like Erzberg or Romaniacs or Last Man Standing. And so then, you know, Last Man Standing, I had a buddy, Marty Helmazza. He had done it a few times and had gone to Erzberg and had some success. And of course he's talking about it and you're like, yeah, that would be pretty cool. I need to go try that. So went to Last Man Standing. It was the third edition of it in 2007. And, right then and there, I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool stuff. I think I need to do more of these. And then you start looking around on the internet and, oh, Erzberg, Romaniacs. So we kind of set our sights on all that and ended up going over there. And I'll never forget going to the first time I went to Romaniacs. I entered pro because I thought I was awesome. I had the abilities to do it. And that was the eye opener. I'm like, oh my God. I'll never forget. We're sitting there it was the prologue. And I'm sitting there watching these guys ride around that I'm competing with. And they're like, they're just doing these like slow first gear wheelies all the way through town, up and over hills. They hit like a building wall and they did a pivot turn 180 degrees. They come back towards me and then they throw it into like a nose wheelie down this hill and they would nose wheelie for like 100 feet down the hill. And I'm just like, okay, so I can't do that. Like, I do not have those abilities. And I'm like, these guys are just playing around, messing around, and they're all doing it. And I'm like, oh God, what did I get myself into? Right.
Yeah.
And, so we got into the event and it was pissed rain the whole entire time. And like the first day I was out there for like 12 hours and it was just like, it was brutal. I was just like, oh my, I'm in way over my head. But I was like, I'm not quitting. Like I came all this way. I put all this effort and money and I got my buddies here with me and I'm like, I'm not letting them down. There's no way. So I just kind of soldiered on. And the second day I found, a guy from Croatia. We kind of ended up, you know, you kind of like you're, it was like, you know, we had a similar skill level. So we ended up kind of being in the same place at the same time a few times. And we're like, he didn't speak English. I didn't speak Croatian, but we just developed this thing. Like, I'm like, all right, I'm helping you. And then he's helping me. And then pretty soon we wouldn't leave each other's side. Right. Yeah. And so all of a sudden him and I just start freight training towards the front. And we were able to like go off of each other as far as navigation. We are identical speed and ability. He gets stuck somewhere. I'd help him quick. I'd get stuck somewhere. And we ended up coming from like 30th. And by the time we were done the event 4 days later, him and I were like, we ended up like, what was it? 9th and 10th or something like that. And
that's amazing.
Yeah. It was so cool. And we didn't even speak the same language. And like all we would just, you know, it's just like fist pumping, but you know, we knew. Yeah. So yeah, that was my first experience of like, I'm like, oh, I'm in over my head. But actually I found out that I wasn't really in over my head. I did have the abilities and the capability to do it. I just needed to believe in myself that I could, right?
Yeah. Just got to get out of your own way.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So that event was like, it was like life changing for me. It taught me like how deep I could go into misery and how much pain I could struggle through and the terror of some of the stuff that they wanted us to ride our motorcycles on. And I was able to kind of, you know, mentally conquer that. And so, I mean, ever since then, I feel like, you know, from a mental side of it, I'm like, there's nothing I can't do or overcome. So that was something that really changed my outlook on riding and life in general too. So then, you know, of course, you get that feeling and you're like, oh, I'm never going to do that again. That was brutal. And then, you know, time goes by and the wounds heal and you're like, oh boy, starting to get that feeling again. Gonna have to go try it out. I want more, you know, that's just the competitive part and everybody has those feelings. Right. And so, we ended up doing a few more and I just had some awesome experiences. And what made those experiences more, like the best for me was I was able to do it with like buddies and friends of mine. And it was always, you know, somebody different that would come along or what have you. And you just get to share those experiences with all those people. And it was just, they're like trips of a lifetime.
No doubt. And you've achieved some success in the ISDE, a silver medal and a gold medal. Like how did that feel climbing on a podium? Knowing that you're riding against like the whole world, it's not just like, I don't know, Southern Alberta or even just one nation like that. Yeah.
It was awesome. And that's always been my goal is I always had this, ever since I started doing the 6 days, in 2005, I'm like, man, I just came away from there and I'm like, I want to get a gold medal. Like that's what that means you're within 10% of the best riders in the world. Right. So I'm like, I think I can do that. But I just needed to figure out how to do it. And then I never did quite get there. The first two times I went was 2005, 2006. And then I kind of took a break. We did all this hard enduro stuff. And then actually in Canada, we ended up having like a Canadian Enduro Championship Series, which came along. And so then we started focusing on that. And then social media came along and all the websites and stuff like that. So we were able to get all this publicity like locally, which are of course our local sponsors and followers really liked. So we focused on that a little bit more, but I still had this gold medal thing I on my bucket list I needed to tick off. And then in 2013, that was the time that kind of came about. And I wasn't super serious into racing that much anymore, but I I guess as I was getting older and my kids were coming along, I wasn't focusing so much on myself, but that was still that one thing I still needed to kind of tick off the list. And then I could be, I'm happy with what I've done in my racing career. So yeah, I took my buddy Lee Freiberger and he came over and helped me. We went to Sardinia in Italy, and I just rode on a club team, and I ended up doing really well and getting that gold medal. And for me, that was kind of like the last hurrah for me. I was like, okay, I'm good. I'm like, you know, I don't have to chase all this stuff anymore.
Yeah.
I kind of accomplished what I set out to do, you know? So yeah, I was super pumped. And that was probably one of the biggest highlights of my career, just being able to achieve that goal and get that sorted out. So
that's awesome. Have you ever given any thought to the fact that you provide that feeling to people through Rocks and Logs and Outliers and Extinction?
I kind of do, because I see it on their faces. Yeah. You know? and that's what drives me. You know, I'm just so like so passionate about it, and providing people those opportunities. And then you see like you get to see the struggles and then the elation. Like, it's just such a cool feeling to be a part of, right? So. And that's the same thing that I went through my career. It's just like you have the struggles and then you build on it and then you're like, yes, I did it. And that's the feeling you see like every time somebody goes over a log or a rock or goes, you know, one of these gnarly hills or whatever. And they're like, I didn't think I could ever do that. Right. And then all of a sudden they do it. And they're, you know, that's it, like that just, oh yeah, got it. Right. And you get to see that hundreds of times over. Right. And it's so cool.
That's awesome.
same thing with coaching. It's the same thing. It's just like, it's so awesome to see people like be able to achieve, you know, things that they never thought they would be able to do. So
that's amazing. And so all the places you've ridden, like where do you find, I don't know, like your favorite spot, the one you think of the most, the one that calls to you from the darkness?
Honestly, like I have a sweet spot for Romania. And I think really, because I relate it to it here, like it's very similar to what we have here. It's just a little bit more freer, or it was back then. You know, you can kind of like, we would just get up from our hotel and we would just ride on the streets and through town. And then we would ride up into the hills, and then the hills are, you know, the train is just like what we have here, in Alberta, right? Like, we have some of the best riding in the world here. So, I think that brought a lot of comfort to me. And I was like, oh yeah, I know what I'm doing here. Like, this is cool. But it was just in a different land, and you're like riding by and there's like old farmers with horse-drawn carriages doing their thing, and that's their living. And you're just riding your bikes by there and seeing all this like super crazy cool stuff, like the culture and the land and stuff like that. It was that was the coolest part to me. So
that's awesome.
So that, I always kind of go back to that. You know, the Romania is a beautiful place, and it was a really great experience for sure.
Do you think if you never slung a leg over a dirt bike, you'd have been able to see and be all the places you've been?
No, I don't think so. I think, yeah, definitely consider myself pretty lucky to have had those experiences for sure.
Yeah, I think so. I think it shaped your life. It shaped the life of your children. Like, it's shaped the lives of so many Calgarians just because they get to ride on your sort of like brainchild or whatever. Like, if you never slung a leg over, things would be a lot different around here, I think.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that is definitely a pretty wicked thing for sure.
Yeah, that's crazy. So, I guess as a coach, what is it that you're finding with new riders or even experienced riders? Like sort of like a common, I don't know, issue you always have to address, like that before we even got to you, we could just do it on our own before day one, minute one with Shane.
Yeah. I think a lot of it is just the positioning on the bike. Like, I spend a lot of time trying to explain like why you need to be in this position versus the position that they're in. And you know, because you can riding dirt bikes is not a simple thing. Like people think it is because it has a seat on it and it has handlebars and you just kind of, you just sit there. It's like people think it's just kind of like the first time they would learn how to ride a bicycle. You're kind of just sitting there and you're kind of all slumped over and you're not real sure about things. But dirt biking is like tough work. Like you're moving constantly and you're using every single part of your body to manipulate the motorcycle. So you need to be in a more athletic position on the motorcycle. And then there's the intimidation factor also of like, there's this thing with like, you know, 40 to 70 horsepower between your legs. And if you do one wrong movement, that thing's going and, you know, you're along for the ride and who knows what's going to happen after that. So people are intimidated. So their body positioning is intimidated as well. They're not ready for the input of the bike. The machine is the boss instead of them being the boss on the motorcycle. Right. So trying to get people into the proper positions to be prepared for that. And then also be in an athletic position to be able to maneuver the motorcycle has been the biggest thing that's, you know, challenge that I have is trying to bring it across to people. Like, and then when I do my coaching, I really try to say like, this is why. And I kind of have over the time been able to develop like little ways to kind of like different ways to bring it across to people, because everybody learns a little bit differently. And, you know, it could be one key word that, you know, person X might not get, but person Y is like, oh, okay, I get exactly what you're trying to say to me right now. So you know, it's that kind of thing. But yeah, rider positioning is big. Even the top riders, like, you know, it's like one thing. Like you learn how to ride a bicycle, and that's just the way you think it's supposed to be done. And you ride that bicycle the same way for
the rest of your life.
And then somebody comes along and says, well, you probably could actually, you know, be a little bit more efficient if you did this. And they're like, huh. But then we've been doing that for all of our life, and trying to change it is not the easiest thing to do, right?
Yeah, because it's tough.
You just naturally come back to that spot that you've been doing for your whole entire life. And I even have that. Like, I know there are certain things, like when I'm riding, I'm constantly analyzing what I'm doing, even more so now that I'm coaching, because I'm thinking about it and I'm talking about it all the time. And I'm like, gosh, darn it, I'm not doing what I actually preach. Like, I gotta get my feet back onto the foot pegs where I'm saying they're supposed to be, but they keep on slipping forward because that's where I've ridden for the last 30 years, right? So yeah, that's been the biggest thing I've found with riders.
And I find
when you do make the changes, it's just unbelievable. Like all of a sudden they're like, oh my God, like I can't believe just something like that. So simple.
Yeah.
Because really, honestly, like none of it's rocket science. It's just knowing why you need to be there and then feeling the why.
Yeah.
It's so big for people. Like there is all of a sudden there's like, oh my gosh, this is way easier.
And it's saving a little focus for self-awareness and not so much on the task. I don't know how to describe it. Like Keith Codes in his book talks about how when you're driving, you have $10 and everything you do costs some money. So in the beginning, learning how to clutch costs $5 and being aware of the traffic around you costs $4 and, you know, all the little things like 60, 70 cents. And you got 20 cents left over to manage what you don't see coming, you know? Yeah. And he's just like, so as you make it a little more natural, a little more on autopilot, so you don't have to think about clutching and all that stuff, it costs you less to maintain those things. And then you have $5, $6 left over for the unknown.
Yeah.
And that's where you want to strive to be, is with money in the bank.
Totally. Yeah. And it's the same way. Like if you ever gone on a ride and you went with a new group and to a new area, you are like using so much more energy because it's just not your body. It's your mental state as well. And so you're completely knackered after that, right? Like you're spent, like you hit the wall, that's it. But you go back there the next time and you're like, oh, I know exactly what to expect this time, because you kind of got an idea of the train and you kind of got an idea of the group. And then that time you're like, oh, that wasn't as bad as I remembered it being. So like coaching, like learning all those different new techniques is the same way. The first time it's like, oh my, this is weird. My butt hurts. My back hurts. I don't think that dude knows what he's talking about. And then I'm like, hey, it's okay. Like, just give it a couple rides. And then all of a sudden people are like, oh, that was amazing. Like, I'm like, well, does your back hurt anymore? No, it doesn't anymore. And I'm like, yes, because you just had those weird stabilizer muscles that you were never used to engaging. And they're like, yeah, now it's like, I totally get why you stand like that or you get in that position. But they're like, I didn't think it was going to work for me at all because it hurt so bad. And I'm like, oh, yeah. It's not like I'm trying to inflict some sort of pain on people or anything like that.
I know.
It's just using new muscles like that you've never had to use before, right? So
yeah, it's kind of like their birth into dirt biking. It's going to be painful, but then once you're on the other side, everything will be nice.
Totally.
No, I don't know. Like, I don't even know how. Like, I class myself as like a new rider. I've been on dirt bike for 3 seasons now, and maybe 4, and I came from like road bikes, I guess. So like I have habits that are totally efficient on the road bike, but they don't translate over, you know, like, so I class them as bad habits and I'm trying to get through them all. Right, like on. Standing totally locked out instead of standing in the attack position, longer than I should. Like, I don't mind standing locked out in some like cruising settings, but then I'll find myself doing it in the woods and then find myself sitting down. And then I'll remember that I'm sitting down and be like, oh, dude, you got to stand. And then
right.
And then you hit a corner where it's like you're allowed to sit for a corner. And then I just stay seated and just like, oh, dude, you got to stand. Like babysitting yourself. I don't know.
It's so funny. I ride a lot of motocross these days, which has like kind of been happening. Like when I went to my first 6 days, I was a hardcore off-road rider. And so I thought 6 days is like the off-road Olympics, right? And
yeah.
So like, oh, I'll be fine. I know how to go through trees super fast. But in 6 days, they have different types of tests. Some of them are like enduro, and then they have cross tests, they're called, which is like very, like basically a grass track.
Okay.
In some farmer's field, right? Up and down, but it's always like undulating up and down like hills and off cambers and weird stuff. So when I did that, I came home, I'm like, man, I really sucked in those cross tests. Like, I'm never going to get a gold medal if that's how I ride. And I had this total off-road style. So when I came home, I'm like, I got to learn how to motocross. And being an off-road guy, I'm like the motocross track was not
scary.
A place you want to go, right? Like, it's just like your bike is soft and it's a scary place because you don't like to, you know, have the wheels leaving the ground that much. And so, but I'm like, nah, I got to do it. I got to will myself to do it. And then I started riding moto. And then as I started getting better, and I'm like, oh, this is cool. And then they start progressing. So now I have like this huge affection for moto as well. And, so I don't know where I was going with that. Okay.
Oh, you're talking about skills transfer, I think is what we were working on really.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Moto skills helping you with ISDE.
Yeah. So then it was funny because like yesterday, actually, we were at the track and I was just like, I'm like, man, I should be sitting because that's what all the motocrossers are doing, but this doesn't feel natural. Like, I feel like I can go through this corner better standing up, which is like a long sweeping corner, right? So I always have a good time when I'm out there because people are like, dude, I can't believe you can go through that corner so fast standing on your foot pegs. And I'm like, yeah, that's just what's natural for me, right? And like, if I have both my feet on my foot pegs, I can weight the bike way better than if I take my foot off and put it in a traditional motocross style. I'm not saying that I don't do that because there's definitely reasons you need to do that, but I sometimes wonder what people think when they see me riding out there because I'll stand a lot more and I'll keep my feet on the pegs a lot more than your typical motocross person would. So that's getting to your point of like, you know, you're going in and you're like, oh, it's a corner, I should sit. And I always tell people, oh, well, does that feel natural or not? And they're like, no, it feels like it's totally awkward and weird. And I'm like, well, stand. And they're like, oh, you can stand through here? I'm like, yeah, stand. it's just so simple, right?
Oh, this was just like an aha moment for me, man. Because like on the hill track, I guess the way it is now, the way they're coming in, they're sort of like a 180 degree turn. Then you're going to go up the hill and like do the horseshoe and come down, go over that culvert. Yep. That turn there, I have to tell, as I'm coming to it, I tell myself I have to sit down to take it. And I don't want to sit down. So when I'm in it, it's just like this cross wiring, this fire, like, I don't know. I just don't take it very nice. I take it very awkward. So now I'm going to try it standing.
Yeah. And especially like long sweeping corners, it's totally fine to stand. Or even if you do sit, like just keep your feet on the pegs. You'll be amazed at the difference in it when you have both feet on the pegs versus like, you know, you think you got to do the motocross turn. Like, cause we see in the magazines and we see the super top supercross riders in the world, they always put their one foot out. But you really don't have to. Like if you have both feet on the pegs, you're able to weight the bike a lot better.
Yeah.
With both those. I mean, if it comes to a really tight turn or something like that, you do have to put your front leg out to weight the front. But a lot of people use that leg out as a crutch. Like as soon as you put that leg out, people just dab, and then then everything goes to shit, right? Like because it's the reason you put your foot out is not to catch yourself from falling. It's actually to weight the front of the bike more so that you get more bite on the front tire. But people use it as a crutch. They dab it, and then all your center mass and everything's off as soon as you do that. So you're just basically screwed, right?
Yeah, I can see it. I can see how the weight transfer would just go sort of from the inside front, go up through your body as soon as you touch the ground, and then go to the outside peg and start lifting you out of the turn.
Yeah,
I can imagine that.
Yeah,
that's crazy. All right. Well, I don't know. I've taken about an hour of your time. So just, is there any like, I don't know, sponsors or anything you want to give a shout out to? Cause I usually try to close that or open with that.
Yeah. This year actually, got a pretty cool relationship with GasGas. They've been helping me out quite a bit, and I'm pumped on that because like, it's kind of the same brand that I've been involved in all along. Like, way back when I was Husaberg, that's where I really started getting support. And that was when KTM bought Husaberg. And then when Husaberg went away, it transferred over to Husqvarna. And then when GasGas came along, I'm like, hey, like I want to be involved in this. And they're like, why? And I'm like, well, when I was with Husaberg, like I could actually see my ability and on our team, this Cornergrass Racing team's ability to actually like, I could actually move the needle a little bit in impact the company as far as like sales and getting people to the dealers and because it was new and people and we were able to get people excited about it. And then, you know, as I transferred over to Husqvarna and stuff like that, and it became even more as popular as KTM, I'm like, I can't move the needle anymore. Like there's just so many, it's just too big, right? And then when GasGas came, well, I'm like, oh, this is something I can actually dig in and really help out with. So we talked and they're like, yeah, let's try this. So that's hence why I'm on a rad bike this year and trying to do that kind of thing. So I'm super pumped on that.
How do you find the GasGas?
It's been pretty good. Like it's very similar to KTM's Husqvarna, like a very similar feel. There's a few different changes on the bike. Like they have different triple clamps on them. Because the whole idea behind that bike is kind of like a fun bike is what they're marketed as. Like they're bringing them in at a lower retail price, so they're in around $800 to $1,000 cheaper than the KTMs and Husqvarnas. And how they're doing that is they like put cast triple clamps on instead of the billet clamps, and like it doesn't come with an hour meter. And it doesn't actually have branding on the wheels, but they are still like XL wheels. So they, I guess through all those little changes, they were able to reduce the price to a better price point, which is in line with the Japanese bikes now. So,
yeah.
So your typical consumer can go, oh, well, what am I going to go buy a Yamaha or Honda or Kawasaki? And now GasGas is in the same market. So they're like, you know, they have that opportunity now to try an Austrian bike that has, you know, the best of the line, well, in my opinion anyways, hydraulic clutches and just the top components like the Brembo brakes and all those KTM type things that so now people have more choices instead of just having, you know, now they're not restricted by a price point anymore. So that's kind of where the gas thing comes along. And I've been riding it. The main difference for me this year actually is I'm on a 4-stroke this year, and I've been riding 2-strokes forever. So that's been the biggest change for me. It's just riding the 4-stroke. And
yeah, fair enough. Yeah. That, there's like a sea of red taking over Southern Alberta.
Yeah, it happens like that, right? People just want change. So it's something new. And so I'm like, oh, I'm all in on that. I'm like, that's cool. The neatest thing about those bikes is they just look like so cool. Like the color of them is like, for me, it's just that's like one of the major appeals of that bike. It kind of looks like a Ferrari almost, you know? So.
Yeah, man. Yeah, they're a nice looking machine. And they sound good. And everybody has been really positive. Anyone I've asked how they like their machine, they're just like, oh yeah, and like really positive. So it's not like anybody's got buyer remorse or anything like that. That's encouraging.
And I established a few more other partners just through the company too, like Midas. So I'm using the Midas brand of tires this year, which has been pretty cool. Like they have a ton of different tires and compounds and stuff like that, so I've been working with them, and I'm pretty pumped on how that is, just because of the selection. Like they have moto tires, they have like off-road tires, and then they have like extreme off-road tires, like the really gummy stuff. So it's really cool because I do pretty much everything that you can do with knobby tires. Like, you know, we're into moto, we're into off-road, we're into hard enduro, we're into trials, we're into all that. So they have a tire for everything. So that's been really, really neat to us to build that relationship with them. And through my coaching, I also use like these, like if I do a private session, I'll use like two-way communication. So
yeah,
I partnered up with Cardo Systems, and that's been interesting trying to use those and talk back and forth to riders. I don't really have to, like, it's super efficient if I can get it all working proper, which sometimes I can and sometimes I can't, just because there's a lot of different buttons and stuff like that. But they work great because I don't have to stop people on the trail and explain. Like I can actually correct them in real time.
Yeah.
And so even if we're out on a trail ride, I'm like, just go left, go right. And they don't actually have to stop. So it's like, I can give people so much more time for their money just by using those things. So I'm pumped on those things.
Those are wonderful, man.
Yeah.
I use them with the family.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. 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 And then we use FXR gear. I get all my suspension and stuff like that done through the shop, direct suspension there. So that's pretty much, and then Blackfoot Direct Off, obviously. I can't forget those guys. They're the main sponsors, actually. So Dean's been really good to us, and my oldest boy Chase is actually working there now. All the marketing and stuff like that for them. So yeah, we got a pretty tight connection with those guys there.
Well, that brings us to the end of another episode. I want to thank my guests for taking the time to sit down and chat with me. A special thank you to you, my supporters. Without you, this would not be possible. If you enjoyed the show, give it a 5-star rating. And if you haven't already, be sure to like, subscribe, and share. If this is your first time listening, I encourage you to take the 3-episode challenge. Once again, thank you for your continued support, and stay tuned to find out what's coming up next time.